court, are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its honorable court.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. We have a applicants for admission. Mr. Fitzpatrick.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm pleased to be here to move the admission of two of Judge Cudahy's law clerks, his two law clerks. Bradley Klein received his undergraduate degree from Duke and went to got his law degree from Yale and is admitted to practice in the state of Illinois. And Jody Madeira received her undergraduate degree from Millersville University and went to law school at the University of Pennsylvania and is admitted to practice in the state of Pennsylvania. And I'm very pleased to be able to move their admission this morning.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. So, Mr. Klein and Ms. Madeira, we're very happy to welcome you to our court. And if you'll step over there, your oath of admission will be administered.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, we're ready now for our first argument, which is Culver versus Gorman and Company. Ms. Cannelli, so this is going to be by phone. All set? Oh, Ms. Cannelli?
Yes, this is Ms. Cannelli.
Okay, well, it's your turn.
Don't dispute that she criticized Schroeder in front of his supervisor, do you?
That's correct. That is what the district court found constituted a significant part of the insubordinate behavior, but it was not her intent to embarrass or humiliate the supervisor by criticizing him in front of him.
Well, why would her intentions be material?
Perhaps her intentions are not material. Her conduct in expressing her concerns in front of Mr. Schroeder She did so because Mr. Jordy had invited Mr. Schrader into the meeting. It was not her idea to have him present. And if Mr. Schrader was concerned that she was voicing her concern about him in a manner that embarrassed him, then he should have taken it up with his supervisor because it was his supervisor's idea to include him in the meeting. It was not Ms. Colbert's idea to do so. And I would like to, just before I ask a question on that particular incident, address a concern that I have, which is that the district court's decision in this regard sets, I believe, a dangerous precedent. If Ms. Colbert can be fired for the manner in which she raised her concerns in this case during that meeting, then employees will be much less likely to resolve issues of discrimination with their employer before filing claims with the EEOC.
Now, your opponent, the appellee, excuse me, appellee's brief on page 5 lists other acts of insubordination. Now, I wonder if you have a comment on that. So, for example, Schroeder asked Culver some questions on work issues. In response, Culver handed him the manual and told him to look up the answers himself. Now, isn't that pretty dramatic insubordinate behavior?
I don't believe that it's the very definition of insubordination as the district court noted, and more importantly, there's
a... Well, what if I asked one of my law clerks to... What if I... Can you hear me? Wait, can you hear me? What if I asked one of my law clerks to look up a case and he said, go look it up yourself? Well, wouldn't you consider that insubordinate behavior?
It would be insubordinate, but it would not be relevant to the issue of retaliation or causation if it didn't motivate you to later fire the law clerk, if you fired the law clerk later because he or she complained about discrimination. And here, there is substantial evidence from which a jury could infer that that incident did not motivate Mr. Schrader. He did not say anything to her at the time. She handed him the manual. They didn't mention it in the meeting on January 10th, even after she asked him why she was being fired. And he did, Mr. Schrader did even mention it in his deposition when I asked him specifically to tell me all instances where Melanie refused to do something that you asked her to do.
What about the resume problem, posting the resume on the computer when she was asked to take it off?
That's an incident that had occurred before these issues of discrimination, pay discrimination, were raised and have been addressed, and it was not something that entered into the decision to terminate her because Mr. Schrader had in fact evaluated her job performance after that occurred, and he evaluated as meeting all expectations of the position. It was not a factor that motivated once again the termination. It was a concern at the time, it had been addressed, and it was no longer at issue at the time she was fired.
Well, you want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
yes, that would be fine, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay, so Mr. Kinney?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. In her oral argument, the plaintiff claimed that the diminished opinion of her after January 7 was unexplained. In this case, however, Ms. Culver admits to having done what Gorman cites as the reasons for her termination. She was insubordinate, and she made at least a veiled threat after her January 7 evaluation meeting with Schrader to quit.
You know, I find this insubordination business a little bit odd because she was talking to her, to the big boss about her complaints, and the big, I can't remember the name of the big boss, Jordy, I guess it was.
Jordy, that's correct.
Said, well, let's call in Schroeder so he can hear what you have to say, which is usually sort of an invitation to be frank. So they called in Schroeder, and she continued to say about the same thing she had before, and it, he turned around and fired her, which strikes me as very unusual. I never heard of a situation of that sort before, where you ask the employee, well, state your complaints. You state the complaints, and then the person who's complained about says, well, you're fired.
Your Honor, it was Mr. Schroeder that was who made the decision to terminate Ms. Culvert.
Well,
Mr.
I know
Jordan.
He did, but there's sort of an inherent implied privilege situation when you call in somebody and ask the employee to repeat the accusations that she or the complaints that she offered before. I think it's rather very unusual for that person to turn around and fire her on the spot.
In this instance, though, Ms. Culver didn't just state her complaints in a civil manner. The first words out of her mouth were an insinuation that she wanted to tell Mr. Schroeder to, quote, stick this job, end quote. She went on then not only to raise work issues, but to actually criticize Mr. Schroeder's competence to continue in his position in Mr. Jordy's presence.
Well, didn't Jordy invite her to do that? It seemed to me that she did.
Mr. Jordy invited her to share her concerns in Mr. Schroeder's presence to determine whether or not their working relationship was salvageable.
Well, we would have a different situation if Jordy had fired her, wouldn't we?
Yes.
I mean, I think it is problematic that Schroeder fired her. And do you dispute or that these other incidents that you allege were insubordination were not identified during the deposition?
I dispute that, yes. They were not identified with specificity. However, when...
So they weren't identified specifically as being part of the insubordination. Is that what you mean?
Well, in the brief, I cite to the exact portion of the deposition where Ms. Cannelli asked Mr. Schroeder the reasons for terminating mm-hmm. Ms. Culver. And he said something to the effect of, I asked her to do something for me, and she didn't do it.
But during the conversation where she was fired, that was not mentioned.
During the conversation where she was fired, correct, Mr. Schroeder did not give Ms. Culver any reasons for his firing her, except to say that, well, he gave a truthful response that there were issues.
I thought he said he'd let her, he'd tell her what the issues were at an exit interview, but there wasn't any exit interview.
You're right, Your Honor. The mm-hmm. exit interview never occurred.
And so isn't that problematic, too?
It doesn't create a contradiction. There's no legal requirement that an exit interview be given. It doesn't contradict any reason or create any suspicion on a pretext analysis that the reason that he actually gave to her wasn't true.
But couldn't a jury find that this was a mixed motive case? Yes, she was insubordinate, but the her filing the complaint was kind of the last straw, and that played a role in Schroeder's decision. Is that possible?
Your Honor, I don't think it would be. The only way that would be possible would be for the jury to decide that this, by simply disbelieving Gorman's witnesses. And in Millbrook, the court has stated that that isn't sufficient.
Right, not sufficient, but on the other hand, there is the timing. And if you have a little evidence, you can certainly put that together with disbelieving the other side's witnesses.
And, Your Honor, I'll posit it in this case, there isn't even a little additional evidence.
Well, the evidence is the timing.
You're right. And in this case, that's the only evidence that the plaintiff has to support her claim, and there has yet to be a
well,
title.
Apparently, Schroeder changed his views rather precipitously during this three-day interval, didn't he?
Yes, he did, Your Honor, and for good reason. In that three-day period, Ms. Culver had, when asked to do a task for Mr. Schroeder, had tossed the book back at him and told him to look it up himself.
Well, he didn't make any complaint at the time, though. That's the problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't regard that apparently as a major item at the time. He didn't say anything about it. I don't think it was brought up until you got around to filing a summary judgment motion, was it?
He didn't say anything to Ms. Culver at the time. However, he did say something to Mr. Jordy at the time. That is, when they were discussing the purpose of the meeting, Mr. Schrader told Mr. Jordy that her attitude was not tolerable, and that the purpose of the meeting then was going to be to determine whether or not the relationship could be salvaged. So he did say something at the time, even if he didn't say something directly to Ms. Culver. In this case, Ms. Culver admits to having done what Gorman...
Why did Jordy get involved if he wasn't going to make the decision?
Ms. Culver went to Mr. Jordy to ask for a meeting between her and Mr. Schrader, and Mr. Jordy agreed to bring the meeting together, even though he didn't have the authority to terminate her.
He didn't have the authority?
Well, he didn't have the immediate authority.
He's the boss, wasn't he? Mm-hmm.
True, granted. He could have fired her. He was not the person who decided to fire her. Mr. Schrader was the person who decided to fire her.
Did he endorse Mr. Schrader's act of firing her, or did he stand mute? What was his position on the whole matter?
He essentially stood mute. He did not rescind Mr. Schrader's decision to terminate Ms. Culver.
So then he really ratified it by standing silent. His inaction was a ratification or an agreement with the decision to fire her.
Possibly. Ms. Culver never actually asked Mr. Jordy to reconsider the decision. Mr. Schrader was the one that made the decision. Mr. Jordy did not rescind Mr. Schrader's decision. Whether or not that can be characterized...
It's a very unusual situation when the boss calls in a subordinate and there's further conversation and the subordinate fires the employee who's having the interview. I never encountered a situation quite like that before.
And you say there's not very much evidence, but I think the fact that there was a promise for an exit interview, and I agree with you, there's no requirement, but that's how I view that promise for the exit interview, and then no actual exit interview. I mean, I think that adds to the evidence that the plaintiff has in addition to the timing. I mean, I think we have to look at all the circumstances surrounding this. It's not just a timing issue.
Your Honor, you're right.
I mean, for purposes of whether it should go to the jury, I'm not saying that the plaintiff necessarily would prevail if it went to the jury, but for summary judgment purposes.
I agree, Your Honor. The law definitely requires the court in a summary judgment analysis to consider all of the facts. However, the court is also not supposed to sit as a super personnel board and decide whether or not the business decisions made by the company, by the employer, are proper decisions to make. Now, the company changed its mind about giving her the exit interview. There isn't anything that flows from that that would suggest then that retaliation, that unlawful retaliation, was the basis for the termination. In this case, Culver admits to having done what Gorman has cited as the reasons for her termination. Gorman has never given different reasons for her termination. The only reasonable conclusion to draw from that is that Gorman fired Culver for the reasons Gorman has given in this case, the core factual accuracy of which Culver does not dispute. Culver's case is essentially based on a fallacy. Post hoc, ergo propter hoc, after this, therefore, because of this. She posits that because her alleged discrimination complaint preceded her termination, that a jury could reasonably conclude that it caused her termination, even though there's no other substantial evidence to support the conclusion. The district court was correct to grant Gorman's motion for summary judgment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kinney. Ms. Cannelli, how much time does she have? 3 minutes? Okay, you have 3 minutes, Ms. Cannelli.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just like to clarify page 54. was, I don't remember exactly now. He didn't identify anybody in his deposition that he failed to do. Second, I'd like to clarify that Ms. Colbert scheduled this meeting. We talked about her concerns about state discrimination and other concerns she had about the free trader. She did not schedule the meeting. This meeting was not to any of the relationship with the outfit. She scheduled it. And third, I'd like to come back to this point about putting the president upholding a court decision where conduct that Melody Colbert engaged in is considered so insubordinate that an employee would be deprived of the protection of the anti-retaliation provision. She really didn't do or say anything in that meeting that merited termination. If she had filed an EEOC complaint, and put in that complaint everything that she said at that meeting, including criticisms of Mr. Schrader not visiting Leaky Roof when he was supposed to, and other concerns that were unrelated to the central issue of pay discrimination, the employer could fire her for that. I don't think the employer would dare fire an employee for including such harmless comments in an EEOC complaint. Why then should an employee be fired because they choose to hold a private meeting and raise concerns in that manner? It seems to me that that is something that should be encouraged and has been encouraged by the state. Ms. Colbert respectfully requests that the court reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment. And I would like to thank the court for the opportunity to appear by telephone.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Kennelly, and thank you, Mr. Kenny. And move on to our next case, United States versus Hagenow, Mr.